Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, and welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Network. The following show is just horrifying. Beware.
My friendship to all of you precludes my involvement with any one of you. But if you wanna make love, then I do too, and I'll be right there behind you.
Greetings, constant listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Losers Club, a Stephen King podcast. A bonus episode, if you might add, at least for this week, considering that you just listened to a 3.5-hour discussion on The Mist for its 15th anniversary. Well, we have a little bonus here because we have the star of that film and one of our favorite familiar faces in King's Dominion, Mr. Thomas Jane. Now, you're probably thinking, wait a second, you had Thomas Jane on 5 years ago. And you're right, we did. We did have Thomas Jane on 5 years ago. And honestly, after that conversation, which was supposed to be only 30 minutes, and I think went a little longer than that, maybe over an hour, we talked about everything. I remember turning to Justin in our former office and saying, well, that's it. We're never going to do that again. And well, we are doing that again. So famous last words, you know, eating crow. But yeah, so this all kind of caused a wheel. Everything kind of happened magically here, you know. So I knew that we were going to be doing an episode on The Mist because, you know, we wanted to continue this long watch series. And it just so happened that Thomas Jane has a new movie out. It's called Slayers. He plays a ballsy vampire slayer named Elliot Jones. It's got Kara Hayward, Jack Donnelly, Lydia Hurst, Malin Ackerman, Abigail Breslin. It's pretty fun. It's on Hulu right now. You can get it on VOD. He ran it through Renegade Entertainment, which is his own production company. And we talk about that. And he also talks a little bit about, gives an update on From a Buick 8, which he's trying to get through Renegade. But we also talk about Hollywood leading men, internet culture and social media, which, by the way, he was one of the first to leave Twitter long before Elon took over. And Horror's Big Comeback, he talks a little bit about the room for more alternative comics. As you know, he's a big, big name in that area. Not Marvel and the DC, all the stuff like that, but the alt comics that we grew up with, really. And then also, you know, this is a Stephen King podcast. Of course, we talked about growing up with King, his run of Stephen King movies. I point out that I think it's been 5, 10, 15 between each movie. Yeah, something like that. and no, actually it was 5, 15, 20. Anyway, you'll hear it. He talks about that. Yeah, he adds which role is his favorite. And then, you know, then we get into some other stuff as we're wont to do, as anyone is wont to do when you talk to Thomas Jane. I'm a huge fan of him. I never shut the fuck up about him on this podcast. I've been in his corner for a very long time, as you can hear on our missed episode, which, by the way, if you haven't heard that episode and you're just jumping here because you're a Jane head like me, go back, go listen to the missed episode. It's a great episode. We got Justin on there, got Ashley on there, we got Rachel on there. 3.5 hours on arguably one of the best Stephen King movies. But look, right now it's time to sit back, maybe grab a cigar like Jane does, maybe grab a drink like I do, and enjoy our conversation. And I'll see you next week. Over long days and pleasant nights.
All right.
Hey.
See myself? Not yet.
No, there you are. How you doing?
Good.
Well, look, thank you so much for doing this again. It's been 5 years, I think almost to the day, since we last chatted here on The Losers Club. And
what was it about?
We were talking about 1922. Oh, okay. And then we went into, I mean, it's one of my favorite chats. We just went into everything possible under the sun. I mean, we talked, I think we talked Twin Peaks, The Replacements. It was wild. It was a wild chat.
You have a prodigious memory.
Hey, you know, when it's a fun chat, I got to keep it somewhere locked up in the old noggin. But
right on.
Yeah. Well, You know, I think the timing is good here because I absolutely love Slayers. I thought this is a blast. I love when you can just kind of, I don't know, take control of a scene and just kind of be the cool guy in control. And I wanted to ask you, you know, because Elliot has so much swagger to him, but I think a lot of your characters have a lot of swagger.
Interesting.
And I wondered if there are any leads from the past, like Hollywood past, that maybe you looked up to growing up, or maybe you even kind of think about when you're going into roles sometimes, or, you know, when you, what is cool to you?
I've got a lot of influences, you know. I mean, I obviously fell in love with cinema at a very early age, and, you know, the byways and highways you can find in cinemas, you know, really big. I mean, it's not endless. There's a limited amount of movies, but damn, it seems awful close, especially when you start adding in all the foreign stuff.
Yeah.
So I've been influenced by folks from all over the world, but I guess starting out Clint Eastwood, watching spaghetti westerns with my dad on Saturday night. We never missed one. Every time they came on, we'd watch it, no matter how many times we'd seen it. And, you know, that was sort of, I suppose, the beginning. I remember, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly played one weekend. And then Monday morning, I decided to borrow my mom's big wide-brimmed hat. And she had like a serape. And I put that on and I just showed up at school. You know, I mean, we're in elementary school, for God's sake. And I show up with cowboy boots and a serape and, you know, this crazy, I think it was like a red hat that my mom had, and just walked around the school kind of trying to feel what it would feel like to be the man with no name. And, you know, my buddy came up to me and goes, dude, I saw The Good, the Bad, the Ugly too on Saturday night. Take that shit off. And that was memorable. I don't know. It was like, you start walking around as these guys. And I think film is so influential like that, you know. And then Jimmy Dean.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, Jimmy Dean, James Dean. Wow. You know, I mean, what a talent. And every time I watch Rebel Without a Cause, I'm amazed all over again at how raw that guy was, how he wore all of this turmoil of emotions on his sleeve. And you could just, everything was this painful. And as a teenager, you just relate to that so much. So that was a big influence. And then Brando, of course, discovered him a little bit later. He'd be in like Superman, you know, be playing Superman's dad. And I'd be like, who's that guy? Who's that old guy? And then discovered sort of his earlier films, and that had a big influence. Then, of course, you know, Harrison Ford, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, when that came out, Star Wars, you know, I liked Han Solo, but Raiders of the Lost Ark, man, like
Sam.
That character just knocked me down, because he had foibles, you know, he was clumsy and,
yeah, exactly.
And he said the wrong things and he had a sense of humor. And that was a really big influence, you know, it's trying to find the vulnerabilities of people. And, you know, and then it goes on from there, you know, and then you discover Steve McQueen.
Oh, totally.
And then Bogart. You know, you gotta love Bogart. God, I think I've seen most of Bogart's films, and I've seen him evolve. I saw him evolve. That if you go back into his early stuff when he played bad guys, he wasn't Bogart yet, you know, and you could see him start to add these pieces of his character as you watch his career progress until he becomes suddenly Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah.
I was like, that's cool. You know, I saw Jack Nicholson do that, you know, when you see Jack Nicholson's early movies like Easy Rider, or then some of that weird sci-fi shit that he did but way back in the day. And,
yeah.
And the old independent 60s independent movie, he wasn't Jack Nicholson yet. And then so you sort of saw him sort of come alive at some point and come into his own. And those people had influences on me, because I, as an artist, I got to see the progression of how people sort of wear who they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I see all that DNA for sure. I mean, the comment about Ford and Raiders really sticks out to me, because what I love about a lot of the heroes that you play on screen, and sometimes anti-heroes, is the idea that, you know, they aren't perfect, that they are imperfections. I mean, I think that's kind of what I'm exhausted with a lot of the stuff today, is that it just feels like all the superheroes have an answer. It's like, it's far more interesting when, you know, the lead is kind of like, it's like what he says in Raiders. It's like, I'm making this shit up as I go. I mean, that to me is just so much more interesting. So I want to talk about the theme for a bit, the film, because, you know, so much of Slayers is about, you know, the vapity of the internet celebrity. And I think what I really connected with is the idea that these internet celebrities, or just celebrity in general, can be so easily capitalized and commodified and corrupted by larger entities. And I wondered, given your recent history of Twitter and kicking it out of your life, is this a subject that concerns you? Is this something that you think about a lot? And that, is that what drew you to the project?
Well, I mean, I started a company called Renegade in 2019 for the express purpose of finding genre movies that were left of center, that bent the frame somehow, you know, and that were intelligent, and that hit all the notes of a good genre movie, but also made you, you know, they had a point of view, that, you know, they're smart. And also they're talking about, if you're lucky, you can find stuff that's talking about what's going on in the world right now. And I think people need that in their art. They need that in their music. They need that in the books that they read. We need a reflection of some sane or insane, doesn't matter, point of view, but we need a point of view that we can see, like, these are humans living in the same world that I'm living in, and this is what they're seeing, you know, and whether they're right or wrong, or I agree with them or not, I'm watching a reflection of myself in the world now. So that drew me to Slayers, that we got to play with some of the themes that we're being inundated with as a society now. One of them being that the world has been taken over by a cabal of vampires. I think that that's not too far off the mark.
It's not, no.
To tell you the truth. And so that was exciting to be able to bring to life.
Yeah, I mean, and I think when you think about the internet itself, is I always go back to like Bowie's quote about the internet back in the late 90s, where he talked about how it was like an alien life. You know, it's like this thing that's exhilarating and terrifying all at once, and we don't really know what we have in our hands. It's kind of like the tip of the iceberg that we only hit.
Right. You know, it's taken on a life of its own, hasn't it?
Right. Yeah. Like, do you think that it's kind of like a Pandora's box situation at this point? Like, or even like what it says in the movie, this sort of like epidemic almost, where it's just kind of like an unstoppable thing that will just, I don't know, it's uncontrollable by us. And at this point,
well, that's the problem. The problem is that it is controllable. When it came out, when the internet came out in the 90s, I was there.
Yeah.
And I waited for uploads, you know, when you wanted to watch a 3-minute clip, you had to upload. And then sometimes they'd give you, and it would took minutes. And sometimes they gave you a little game to play while you waited, a simple little stupid game to play while you're waiting for something to upload. And then it uploads, and then it's ready, and then you watch it. And that opened up this entire world of humanity, you know, but also what they knew, what they thought. So you had this forum where people could just be stupid, and then the anger started coming out, you know, where people had this outlet where they could say whatever the hell they wanted to whoever the hell they wanted to, in whatever way they wanted to, and they were vicious. You know, and there still are. I mean, they're vicious, you know, and they're working out some horrible, so it's the dark side of humanity. And then there's also the knowledge that you can gain about all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, all the way from the really complicated scientific principles that people are working on, you know, down to the history and the real history of World War and of countries. And then you start, in my mind, started seeing a narrative take place that was completely different than what I'd been taught in school about America. Yeah. About the world in ways that were really fresh at a perspective, right?
Totally.
And then you had an obligation, if you were curious and interested in whatever subject that might be, you have an obligation to do your due diligence and research points of view that you find compelling, but are they true? So then we all had to become sort of investigative reporters in finding who are the sources, who is writing this, who is paying them, who benefits, cui bono, where am I getting this and why, you know, and then those questions and answers lead you further down a rabbit hole. So all of this provided access to information that we've never had before. And then people who are interested in something can then hook up and debate it and talk about it and work out the truths, because the truth is so complex. And it's, I guess the truth is simple, but our understanding of what that truth is really complex. And mm-hmm. we have a lot of barriers, personal, professional, societal barriers that we have to overcome in order to understand the truth. And these things are dangerous to people who want to be in control. They're dangerous totally. Because the truth is dangerous. We still live in a society where secrecy is a currency, right? Where secrets are power. Secrets are powerful. And so right away, you've got this massive machine that you're up against, which essentially says that's all bullshit. That's a conspiracy. And in fact, we don't talk about conspiracies, because if you do, then you're nuts. You're a loon. You're outcast. You no longer have a seat at the table because you're talking about stuff that's wacky.
Yep.
That has been erected as a barrier between ourselves and the truth. And that's, you know, germane to the character Elliot Jones. He's a guy searching for the truth.
Yeah.
So that journey is so important, and you can tell how dangerous it is by the resistance that we're getting from the machine, by the people who are pulling the strings behind the curtain, who don't want you to know they're there. But now we do know they're there. The internet has exposed something called the deep state in a way that everyone just thought was a bunch of bullshit and nobody had time to even contemplate. But now these things are starting to run our lives in ways that are really uncomfortable. I don't want to be canceled for my opinion about things, you know, and I don't want to be knowledge used as a weapon against the society that is, you know, in the innocent quest for knowledge, because knowledge is power. You know, when we have the knowledge, we can make decisions that are informed in reality. And this is dangerous. Yeah. Okay. This is dangerous to people who want to control us. And that's why we're seeing such this massive resistance lately. So in the 90s, the internet had all this possibility of basically being a freedom machine, that we were free, our minds were free, that we had information at our fingertips, and democracy was literally in the hands of the people, and we're seeing this being eroded right now. We're seeing it being stripped away. The power of the people is a real thing. We really do run the world if we have the balls to do it. And, you know, most of us just kind of want to be told what to do.
It's true.
But if we're being told what to do by powers that don't have our best interests in mind, then we need to wake up to that.
What is your relationship currently with like social media at this point? You try to like keep it as much away from your life as possible, or is it more of just a functionality?
I don't have any room in my head for social media.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in stuff that I'm interested in, and I do research on it all the time. And I'm on my own journey of discovery, of finding, you know, of throwing out ideas, of adopting ideas, of being challenged with those ideas, and then evolving, you know, I'm evolving.
Yeah.
So I don't have time for social media. It's a tool like anything else, and I think it can be used for good. But mostly I see apathy, echo chambers.
Yeah.
I see weaponization of society. I see things being, you know, blown out of proportion that have no real impact on most people's real lives.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Distract you by getting you to care about some bullshit. And then the massive amounts of disinformation. And I mean the real disinformation. And that usually comes from mainstream media. Mainstream media is a disinformation machine. I think Noam Chomsky recently came out and said, we have more propaganda in this country now than the Soviets did in the 80s and 90s when they were full on totalitarian communist country, which they're not anymore. Yeah. So erecting false enemies and using misinformation, disinformation, and just plain old fucking lying to control people is the most dangerous thing happening in our world right now.
Yeah, I mean, and that's honestly one of the big horrors that I try not to think about too much in a day-to-day, but this movie certainly very subtly taps at it at points and ways where I couldn't help but think of that was just real the core themes we're drawing at. It's just this idea that, you know, we think of vampires as this thing that is a thing of fiction, and yet it's been right there before our eyes if you did the research. And that's kind of just a good commentary on just how things are in general these days, I feel like. I just think, yeah, you know, it's just do the legwork in a little bit and you'll probably find the clarity there. But horror, right. I want to talk about horror for a second because it's clearly having a moment right now in the box office. You know, it never really goes away, but I feel like the box office this year has just been wild.
Interesting.
And I'm wondering, has that caught your eye with Renegade? You know, is that something that, is this like a genre that you're trying to chase with Renegade?
You know, we're trying to chase whatever comes across our desk that we feel like we could get behind and have a chance of making, where if Renegade didn't exist, this movie may have no chance of getting made. So those are little jewels, right? They're hard to find and they're precious when you do find them. And then putting in the time, and of course we've only have so much bandwidth, so putting in making the decisions about which one to really get behind and put our effort and energy into getting made is also a decision. So we're not looking for any particular genre, rather we're looking for the artist, the writer, the director who we feel that we want to get behind, put our weight behind and get stuff made that normally otherwise wouldn't have the chance. And whether that's horror, science fiction, crime, action, all of those things are on the table. Horror movies do not come around. You know, I mean, I'm glad they're having a moment, but finding a good horror movie is not easy.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so much crap, and the horror audiences are loyal. They'll watch any kind of bullshit you put in front of them.
That's
and
true.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them. You know, and they stick to the genre and they make sure that the genre gets made. People, yeah, put money behind horror. But, you know, that leaves you open to just wading through mountains of crap to get to something good. And that, you know, it's hard. It's not easy. And every single idea under the sun has already been attacked at least once. You're looking for maybe not something that's so original, but something that has an original way of telling the story or says something vital about what needs to be said right now.
Well, one story you did have that, I mean, look, this is a Stephen King podcast, so I have to ask about it, is From a Be Okay. And one of my favorite stories. And we actually just revisited it last month. And I swear to God, I can't, the whole entire time reading it, I was like, you're Sandy. You have to play. I mean, if you're going to be doing this movie, you got to be Sandy.
Right.
So I wondered, I got it. So what's the latest? Is there any update on this? Because we're dying to see this movie come out.
Yeah, we are. You know, the latest on Buick 8 is, from Renegade's perspective, has been put on hold for the time being while we're attacking other projects. And Buick 8 might come back around to us. We're certainly huge fans. We've got a couple of really strong writers who I won't tell you who they are right now, but when the time is right to pull the trigger on that thing, we're going to put everything we've got into it and just really talented people behind it. I have to check and see what the status is on that in terms of Renegade's involvement with it. Buick 8 did wonderful things for us because when we got the rights to the book, we opened the doors for making other movies and getting the attention of other producers and financiers. Yeah. So certainly very near and dear to the Renegade heart. And, you know, I've been a King fan since I can't tell you when. I guess it was my mom. I had the good fortune of being born into a family of readers. My mother and my father,
it's a good thing.
Avid readers. Every night, every afternoon that they had a free couple of hours, you'd always see my folks with a book. And they read to me when I was little, and I read to my daughter, and I passed that on. You know, I knew how important it was to me. So I read to her every night, put her to bed with a story. Every night we read books together, chapter by chapter. And that's essential, you know, to any parents out there, you know, reading and finding stuff that's just a little bit over their age range, you know, find stuff that titillates them just enough that they understand it, but not all the way. That kind of thing was really influential on me. And my mother let me read pretty much anything. And, you know, they were pretty liberal in that regard. You know, they didn't have a lot of money when we were growing up. My dad was ended up starting three businesses and doing very well. But when we were little, on Saturday night, date night, me and my sister would come with my mom and dad to the movie, you know, because they didn't have money for a babysitter.
Yeah.
So I had a great experience where we went to a drive-in movie theater. We had a VW van bus, and an army blanket. And me and my sister would hide under the blanket so that mom and dad could only had to pay for two tickets to get in. And we part, and then we'd set up those speakers on the window, and I watched Mad Max like that.
Oh man.
Yeah, it was absolutely stunning. Mad Max.
God damn.
In the original, it had just come out. It wasn't playing in a lot of theaters, but it was the original. They ended up dubbing it with American accents and releasing it. This is before that. This was the original Australian version where you could barely understand what anybody was talking about. But that was super influential on me, experiences like that, you know, and I was just a kid. I mean, I shouldn't have been watching Mad Max, you know, in today's world, but we did. And those experiences, you know, left an indelible mark.
Seems like pop culture has just been a big part of your life from the get-go. Has it always just been an escape for you?
Film and books and comic books, you know, that's, you know, of course, music. Yeah, I was a punk rocker. I loved anything alternative, you know, the alternative music, the, you know, discovering Charles Bukowski in my 20s, John Fante, anything left of center, you know, I guess reading Henry Miller when I was too young to read it.
Oh, man.
Like that kind
Never
of
too
stuff.
Young.
Yeah, that kind of stuff was really influential. And I've tried to reflect that in the choices that I make. In the movies, I am a fan of genre, but I'm also a fan of the alternative voice. Well, and I think that the alternative independent voices are needed now more than ever.
100%.
When we're being controlled by a machine that everyone seems to be a slave to recently. It's no good.
I wanted to ask about that because, I mean, comics is an area that you have a very big, you know, you flex your muscles in that capacity. And, you know, we live in this era where everyone assumes that, well, comics are the rage right now. But I have always argued that, like, it's not weird enough. Like, I just feel like it's kind of like they're only really hit the surface with comic books at this point right now. It's like you get the superheroes out there, sure. But, like, there is just, like, as you're saying, there is a whole alternative scene when it comes to comics out there. And it's like, do you feel like this is kind of like an unexplored territory still at this point? I mean, I feel like the 90s had a better coverage than today's.
The 90s were big for independent comics, you know, it was huge. And they're still around. Yes, the alternative independent voice in comics is the only way to go. I steer clear of all the superhero stuff. I steer clear of Marvel, DC. Some Dark Horse stuff I'll pick up. Some Image stuff I'll pick up. But I really love the independent smaller companies and have since the 80s with Pacific Comics. Pacific Comics did this great run in the 80s for just a few years, but The Rocketeer, Twisted Tales, Twisted Tales, Alien Worlds, Bruce Jones. He ran that for a minute. He had all the great artists. He had Bernie Wrightson and Richard Corbin, and he told really great stories that were inspired by the old EC comics. And that had a huge influence on me. So I love crime, the crime books. I'm myself pre-code horror. The
yeah.
Comics Code came out in response to these brutal stories that they were putting out ostensibly for kids. But, you know, I've got some covers here. I've got my underground pre-code horror collection is some of my favorite stuff, you know, because you got a woman's head, a decapitated woman being dropped down a manhole. You got a guy with a bullet in the middle of his head. He'd just been shot. You got a guy who's been radiated by radium and half his face is melted off. I mean, that's, man, when you're like 12, 13 years old, that's gold.
Oh, absolutely. And I kind of feel like it's missing from a lot of, I don't know, lack of a better word, mainstream pop culture. I mean, that's my biggest thing with horror a lot these days is that I wish it was more merciless. Like, I kind of love the EC comic right. stuff where it's just like, most of the time it's like this sort of Canterbury Tales, Twilight Zone-y like twist at the end where you're like, oh, they're fucked. Like, there's no way out of this. Like, and you just don't really get that as much anymore. I mean, it's funny because you were in a movie called Before I Wake. Uh-huh. And I love the ending of that movie because it's just so, it doesn't pull its punches. It's just like, all right, well, they're screwed. It's it, you know? I wish that there was, you know, they could kind of pummel a little bit in that respect.
We need to be pummeled a little bit right now. You know, we've been through some of the hardest stuff in American society in the last couple of years, the impact of which is still being felt, the fallout, who knows how long it's going to go on. But, you know, I guess the saying is that there is no return to normal, you know,
yeah.
that we've been altered in ways that we're not going to come back from. And also, we all need to be a little more politically aware lately. Now, mm-hmm. we need to take the reins and try to steer this country toward freedom. You know, freedom is the ground that the whole edifice was built upon. And I think people are kind of forgetting that a little bit. And the shock power that horror genre has is really necessary, and it's necessary now. And I hope that people have been influenced by this experience and are writing some stuff now that doesn't pull its punches, that is hard hitting.
Yeah.
It does, you know, kind of wake us up. We need as many wake up calls as we can get, and we need them fast.
Yeah.
We need a swift kick in the ass.
Well, you've certainly been a part of a few of those endings. I already mentioned Before I Wake, but I think the biggest one is one that's actually celebrating its anniversary this year, The Mist, which is, I mean, I just remember sitting in the theater and that ending hits and everyone just being like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, so I wanted to ask, because this is actually, I didn't realize this, but until I was doing numbers and this, so this year it's 20 years since Dreamcatcher. It's 15 since The Mist. And it's five since 1922. So you're on a kind of a nice little scale here going there.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. You know,
so we have our picks, but I wanted to ask you, like, what do you think brought out the best Jane out of those three?
Out of the Stephen King? You know,
yeah.
I got to tell you, I really enjoyed my performance. You know, I really enjoyed working on 1922.
Oh, yep.
I really loved that character. It was a character that kind of leapt out of the page at me when I was reading it. It was actually a story that I hadn't read of King until I got sent the script. So I got to read the script and then go back and read the novelette. It's a novella.
Yeah.
Or like a really long short story or a really short book. and that character grabbed me and brought out my grandfather, who was from Alabama and worked with his hands and was a Navy man and was just kind of an overall strange dude.
Yeah.
And I was always a little bit frightened of him. We didn't go down and see him too much, you know, down in Alabama. But when we did go, it was like visiting this alien world where the smells were different. The people are really different. They had those accents, the Alabama accent. And that left a mark on me that I was able to exercise with 1922. So I guess that's sort of personal. That character is personal to me in a way that some of the other ones aren't.
No, that definitely spoke to us. I mean, when we talked last time, I think we were kind of praising on the performance, but I mean, 5 years later, what I loved about that movie, and especially since we've been on the King beat for the last 5 years, is that it really did kind of promise a new type of King movie. You know, like it just kind of opened up the door to like, well, this is a story you haven't heard before. And it's also darker than most of the movies that we have. Like, it's a very dark film. And that's why I kind of think makes it so timeless. You know, I almost feel like if you go for the jugular sometimes, it kind of lasts time a little bit more. But
absolutely. You know, we got to go for the jugular. We need it more than ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one was dark and we didn't shy away from that.
No,
there's actually some humor in there. We like when he's got the cow over the well and the cow falls through into the well. And you know, there's some funny bits, but overall pretty dark.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when we talked, you also mentioned that, you know, the Mist, working with Darabont, was kind of like film school for you. And I'd wonder, you know, do you and Frank still keep in touch? And that work on The Mist also kind of influenced you to where you're at with Renegade right now?
Absolutely. You know, Frank said, he invited me into the editing room. He's like, yeah, come on by, you know. And I showed up, and I showed up every day. I showed up 5 days a week and just sat on the couch behind Frank and the editor and just listened and watched. And I watched this movie come out of their hands. And I learned so much. And Frank said, you know, I invite a lot of people over to the editing room, but nobody's ever taken me up on it. And you show up every day. And, you know, I stayed out of the way and was quiet. And every now and then Frank would ask my opinion on something. Other than that, I kept my mouth shut and watched, listened, and learned.
Have you seen, I don't know if you know, but in like over the summer, it really took on a new mass appeal. Like it was in like the top 10, The Mist was for like, I think like 2 months.
I did read that. Somebody sent me something. And and that I was always a little mystified. Why do you think that mystified?
I know, the nice
point
there.
Why do you think that was?
I think a lot of it has to just do with the fact that you were discussing before is this, we're coming out of a hard time. And although that movie does go for the jugular, there is something sort of, I don't know, maybe not hopeful is the right word, but there's something comforting in seeing everyone kind of go together through this kind of clustered environment and kind of get through it together in a weird way. Like I that's kind of my own personal read of it. It is sort of comforting seeing like the human condition in these awful fucking miserable situations.
Right.
So I don't know, maybe that's it. Or maybe it's just, I don't know, because it's a great bottled tension movie. I mean, like a one location thriller or one location horror film, I think it speaks volumes sometimes because it's just.
I think you nailed it. It's people being thrust into a pressure cooker situation where they couldn't leave the grocery store, where everything outside was unknown and gonna kill you. It was a great metaphor for this fucking pandemic, isn't it?
Yeah.
They were all reacting in different ways. Everybody was losing their mind in a different way. There was no one right answer, you know, for how to deal with the world suddenly just shifting on a dime and changing everything right away. I mean, it really was lockdown.
Yeah.
In The Mist, and I think you nailed it.
Well, it's very prescient. Very prescient. I always fuck that up. But anyway, so I have one question I have to ask, because one of the bits that we've done with my friends for the last 10, 15 years is Homeless Dad. Yeah. So I got to ask, it's one of our favorite bits. It's from Arrested Development. Yeah. Who came to you with the idea of playing yourself on Arrested Development? And was this something that you were like, oh yeah, I'm game for it. Let me come in.
Yeah, right away. I mean, they did. They came to me and they said, hey, we got this thing. We're wanting to come in for a couple of days and it's Homeless Dad. And I was like, this is great. This is fantastic. I had a lot of fun with it. Yeah, every now and then I get asked to do a little cameo like that. The other one was playing the vegan police.
Yeah.
you know, and they kind of resonate with people. I'm very, grateful to have been invited to do a couple of things like that. I think they can be a lot of fun. And sometimes they resonate and they stick around, they last.
Well, do you ever have people come up to you and ask you to say, I just want my kids back? I mean, it feels like that's like, I can't tell you how many times we've said it in our friends group.
No, it's been a minute, but yeah, there was a period where it seemed like everywhere I went, somebody asked me to say, I just want my kids back.
Yeah. On our text threads, we either have that or we have Jason Bateman's reaction to it. He's just like staring at it. But so thank you for that. But it's been great. But so last question I wanted to ask is, I knew that, you know, last time we spoke, we did talk about the replacements, and I wanted to wonder, you know, what are you listening to these days? Like what's getting you going? Is there, you know, any records per se that you've been coming back to that you're like, fuck, this is a great record?
Wow, that's really a good question. Let me look and see what I've been listening to. I've been getting into the.
Oh yeah, you're good.
The is really good. If you want to hear a great song, This Is The Day. That song keeps cycling. You know, it has these periods where it'll come up and I'll just get obsessed with that song all over again. The has a lot of great songs, but that's probably my favorite right now. This Is the Day.
Yeah.
And who's been around recently? I usually hear something in a coffee shop or walking down the street, or I like to tune into public radio and listen to there. And then when I find it, this beautiful app called Shazam.
Oh yeah, yeah. Use it all the time.
I have Shazam, so much cool shit. And these people normally, it's just that one song, and I don't. But if you want to get in, what's her name? Valerie June.
Yeah.
Valerie June has some really cool stuff. It's a few years old now. Shit, it's probably 10 years old now, but I've been getting into her a little bit. Valerie June, she's got a great voice.
Yeah.
And she's put together some really cool stuff. Let's see. My daughter hooked me up with Tame Impala.
Oh, they're awesome. They're just such a blast. Yeah.
Yeah. They're really fun. And then I was a big Kate Bush fan back in the day, and the Chromatics have a really great.
Oh, man. Cover. Yeah.
You got a great cover of Running Up That Hill. I've been into that.
Yeah, Chromatics are wonderful. I mean, they did a lot of the score for like Twin Peaks and like Drive and all. And I'm a huge Chromatics fan.
Right.
LA guys, I think.
The Twin Peaks stuff is really good.
So good. So good.
That's good. Yeah. I'm always looking on the lookout for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It took me a while to shake that stuff. But look, thank you so much for taking the time to talk. I'm hoping to God that we get this Buick out of the garage. I want to see. I mean, do you think you're going to star in it if it gets going?
Oh yeah, I'll play a part.
You got to play Sandy. You got to play Sandy.
I'm leaving the parts open to see who we get and who wants to play what, but I'll squeeze myself in there somewhere.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed, because we love to see you. It's not a Stephen King movie if we don't see you in there. So
I know. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Big fans.
There's still a lot of King to be done. You know, it's finding that balance between you got to find a way of capturing the King vibe. And that's why Darabont, you know, was so beloved, because he really found a way into that King vibe. And that's a special place
that
King lives in, that he's able to create over and over again. It's a familiar, you know, the people, you're deeply connected to them. The world has just shifted just a little bit, and finding that sweet spot is the key to King.
Well, I think you're a skeleton key for a lot of it too. So kudos to everything you got going, and I'm looking forward to see what you got going on next. So
thanks a lot. Appreciate
Have a great evening.
You bet. You too, Mike. See you
later.
I got some hot friends. I got some hot friends. I got some hot friends. I got some hot friends.
This is the end of our show, for now. Tune in next week If you like our programming, consider searching for other bloody disgusting podcasts, such as Creepy, Horror Queers, The Boo Crew, SCP Archives, Nightlight, Margaret's Garden, and more.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM podcast network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.